Welcome to Look Ahead News and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. Every week we get together to talk about world news events. This week we're talking about the continuing fallout from the Mueller report, the measles epidemic in Europe and America, the continuing saga of Brexit, and elections in India and Israel. I hope you enjoy. Thanks very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as we begin the program, just to advise you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, since he is some 5 hours now that the United Kingdom is recognizing daylight savings. It's amazing how countries are able to save daylight. But anyhow, he is joining us evening time for us, and as we are airing this program, he's practically in bed, if not in bed, snoring away. And with that, Tom, good afternoon to you, or actually good evening to you.
Good evening, Lockwood.
Always a pleasure to chat with you, and I'm curious, what's it like in London?
Well, today it's nice, sunny spring weather.
Now,
yesterday it wasn't.
Okay. Is this typical for this time of year?
It's usually a bit warmer. The temperature's dropped a bit, but it's not untypical.
Well, now, looking at this weather, of course, we've always talked about this. What's it like for the gardens? Because I know that the Brits are very proud of their gardens.
Yeah, I've been out mowing the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to start planting out my seedlings. It's time to get out in the garden.
Okay.
I may even have to paint the outside of the house or something.
Oh, hey, I'm glad to hear that you're gainfully employed or are active. Tom, a lot going on around the world. We're going to get into those items, but as we always like to start off with the situations here in the States and how they're being reported there in the European press and the United Kingdom. And the question has to go to the announcement related to the report coming from the Attorney General, William Barr. What's the news on that? How interested is the European community in that affair?
I think they're still waiting for the full report to be issued. There hasn't been a great deal of comment about it. They certainly made note of the fact he testified. They made note of the fact that Mueller said that he did not want to review the summary that Barr put out. I think he's getting a reasonably good press at the moment.
Hmm.
But they're waiting for the full report to come out.
Now, the other question, of course, is
holding fire.
All right. The other discussion, and I'm wondering, is there much coverage on the issue and the concerns associated with redactions in the report?
Well, again, they're holding fire. They can't really see what is likely to have been redacted until you actually see what he sends out.
Well, that's impressive in the fact that you have many in this country right now, well, predominantly in Washington, D.C., who are all providing all sorts of doubts and concerns related to the Attorney General's approach. And, in fact, even now criticizing the special counsel, Robert Mueller. A question for you, and I'm gathering from our conversation, again, a rather mild reaction to all of the news. What is the attitude about the political play that's taking place there in Washington, D.C.?
Not much. Once again, we're so focused on Brexit and the impact it's having here on our own concerns.
Okay.
That we're not really focusing on issues such as the divisive politics in the United States. We've got enough polarization here.
All right. We're going to get into that in a few minutes. Let's talk about issues associated with, the recent announcement by Kirstjen Nielsen, that she is dropping out as the head of the Department of Homeland Security. We've got that. You've got a note here related to the Secret Service chief leaving. And by the way, interestingly enough, the assistant to Ms. Nielsen is also announced her resignation. What coverage of that?
Well, that has gotten a bit more coverage because it is seen as a coup for Stephen Miller.
Okay.
Who is seen as somewhere to, you know, the right of Steve Bannon, viewed here as somewhere to the right of Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon is viewed as politically unacceptable by a lot of people. And so this is seen as a coup for him and a signal that the Trump administration is going to really dramatically change and tighten up immigration policies. Exactly how, nobody is putting out any ideas, but all the signs, way the signs are being interpreted here is that something is about to break on the immigration front.
Now, my assumption is that you're saying it will be more stringent?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, much more stringent because as Ilhan Omar said, Stephen Miller is viewed as a white nationalist here in Europe.
Oh, really?
Which, by the way, I was very surprised. She tweeted it. You know, she may have been wrong to say he was a white nationalist. But Trump immediately said, how dare she attack him for being Jewish, when she didn't attack him for being Jewish.
All right. Well, that's interesting.
That has made a lot of play here, too.
All right. The events in Washington, D.C., again, some coverage. We're going to get to the issues that are really driving the news there in Europe and particularly the United Kingdom. And we're going to get into a lengthier discussion on that related, of course, to Brexit. Let's talk about the president's announcement related to the guards. I'm trying to think of the name for that.
The Revolutionary Guards.
Revolutionary Guards. Thank you. Yes. What's the coverage on that? And what is the concern associated there? Of course,
I was talking to a former diplomat friend of mine about it. And he said, you know, he said, it's a bit like blacklisting your neighbor because he's a pain in the backside. Yes, he is a pain in the backside. Yes, everyone knows he's a pain in the backside. And among themselves, they talk about what a pain he is. But they also know that if they start broadcasting the fact from the rooftops, it would just make him 10 times more of a pain. And they, you know, he was drawing a parallel to that with the treatment of the Revolutionary Guard. Yeah, we all know that they're, you know, nutters. But you don't go shouting about it. You just get on with it and try and deal with it because they're not going to change. They just become more nutty as a result.
Okay, but the Revolutionary Guard, of course, has been engaged in, according to the president and others within the...
we know that.
They're engaged in terrorism. So treating them as a terrorist organization, what difference does it make?
You know, nobody's disputing the fact. Just saying that by making a big deal out of it, you're making a bad deal worse.
Oh, okay. But all right. So, what's the opinion again of the European community on this? Has there been any editorialization opposed to what the president's proposing? And of course, for those who do not know this,
all this is conversations I've had with.
Okay.
With people. This was one particular official who had some experience in the Middle East.
Okay.
There's been not a great deal of editorializing within the press. Again, we go back to what I said before. They're just so self-absorbed with their own problems that they really haven't had time to give much attention to it.
What is the opinion of Iran at this point in the European community?
The opinion of Iran is that Iran is certainly a danger.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a danger since the Ayatollahs took it over since 1979. But the best way to deal with Iran is to engage with Iran. That is why they were opposed to ditching the nuclear accord.
Okay.
And that is why they, you know, are opposed to Trump's policy towards Iran.
All right. Let's talk about one other item that's making the news right now, a big item here in the States, and that, of course, having to do with a measles outbreak and also, by the way, mumps. And I'm curious, and we'll we'll probably wrap it up with this comment before we go to the next break. What is the, first off, what is the opinion of the European community over the whole issue of vaccination or inoculation from these various diseases? What is the
European community, the Commission, advises all of its 28 members to have a vaccination program, mandatory vaccination program if possible, and is set aside money for education purposes. But 15 members do not. It's a national, each national government is allowed to have its own policy. And it varies from country to country. Britain was the very first in 1853 to introduce mandatory vaccinations. In Germany, the teachers have to inform the government if the parents cannot produce a vaccination certificate. In France, they say that children cannot go to school without the vaccination certificates for 11 different diseases. In Italy, that used to be the case, but the new populist government there has revoked that. But as a result, the number of measles cases has gone up, and so they're thinking about reintroducing it. Measles is big here as well.
Wow.
It is quite big. They have had 14,000 cases in the last year, and 34 children have died.
That's interesting. What about the impact? And I'm not making an association, however, some might think that I am. What about the impact of the asylum seekers, the immigrants, and things of this nature? What happens?
I have no information on that. I can only say that, but what they say is that the children who come down with measles or one of these other diseases like mumps, 89% of them have not been vaccinated.
Right. And by the way, is there an anti-vaccine, an anti-inoculation movement?
I haven't come across it.
Okay.
Possibly, I don't know.
Okay. It of course has gained a lot of...
Is there
of,
one in the States?
Yes, there's been a growing... That's one of the great issues here, is that there's a concern that some of these cases are emanating from parents and families where they've opposed to the issue of vaccinating against these diseases. So I just wondered if maybe there was a movement there in the European community.
There's definitely a movement. You know, a lot of people say that it causes autism various other things.
Okay, so the same issues here in the States as well. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon, and we're hearing that that was very interesting news that you shared with us, Tom, about the issue of these, age-old diseases that in many instances we're attempting to eradicate. We'll get back to more here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. He's joining us from London, England, where there's some 5 hours ahead of us. So they already know the news that we're hearing this evening. They've already seen it and experienced it, I'm sure. So he's going to, of course, share with us all the news that we need to know for the evening, thereby saving us having to watch it later in the program or on TV this evening. So, Tom, what happens at midnight tonight? And I say that with tongue in cheek. Tom, and this portion of the program has, of course, been pre-recorded. Tom, let's talk about some of the breaking news there, and most importantly, the topic, Brexit. What is going on?
Well, it's becoming very interesting still. As we speak, literally, the EU heads of government have gone into a meeting to discuss whether or not the... to extend the deadline for Britain to leave the EU if it doesn't have a deal. And it's likely that it will be extended. Mrs. May, Theresa May, has asked for an extension until June. The EU says, well, we don't want to be extending it till June and then extending it again and again and again and again. So if we're going to give you an extension, we'll give you a flexible extension for up to a year, so that you have a year to sort yourselves out. But if you sort yourselves out before the end of the year, then that's good too.
Okay. Now I would, let me interrupt you here. And I did see a story that apparently Mrs. May went to Angela Merkel of Germany to press her case. Am I correct on that?
Yes, she went to France to press her case, and she went to Germany to press her case.
Wow. So Germany and France are seen as the leaders of the EU at this point.
Yes.
Okay. And by the way,
Ireland is playing a very big role, too, in this particular issue, because Ireland is the country which is probably going to be most affected.
Okay. What about Italy and some of the other countries? Are they... I'm just curious, has she visited those countries, or is it just a matter of really the two major leaders being Germany and France?
Well, Italy's being a bit disruptive, but two major leaders are Germany and France.
All right. Obviously, they are they're leading this effort for extending the Brexit.
France is proving a bit difficult. They want conditions attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Macron started off by saying, you know, let's just go ahead and do no deal because we're just sick of how this is tying everything up. We can't do anything else. And so France has said, if we do have to extend it, then several things. One is that Britain has to have elections to the European Parliament in May. They have to go through those.
Wow.
Two, that if you're only going to be in for another year, we don't want you voting on any budget-setting resolutions.
Okay, let's start with the elections to the European Parliament. How is that done? Is that when you say elections, do people stand for election? What's the deal
yes,
with it?
Yes, absolutely. Just as they're elected for anything else. And in the case of Britain, I think it's 75 members of the European Parliament. And if we were to have elections here, it would effectively be a de facto referendum.
Right. That's what I'm wondering.
You know, A lot of the Brexiteers are talking about boycotting it because they're so angry that they have not withdrawn without a deal on the 29th of March, like Theresa May said she would. They're so angry, but they're saying we will not participate in the political process. And normally the elections for the European Parliament have very low turnout.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I think they're going to have a very, very high turnout.
Really?
And it'll be very interesting.
Okay. How do you go about standing for election for something of this nature in the United Kingdom? And my question goes to, do you pull from regions of the United Kingdom for these
yes.
people? Okay.
The regions have already been preset.
Okay.
In discussion with the national government in each country and the European community. You know, based on the size of the country. You know, you get so many members of European Parliament based on your population,
mm-hmm.
And then the electoral commissions in each country decide where the electoral boundaries are drawn.
Okay. Now, the question, of course, is this highly competitive? Is there a competitive nature of these races?
Well, as I said, in the past, there hasn't been. And what's tended to happen is that the only ones who really voted were those who were opposed to the European Union. And so you had a lot of members of the European Parliament, such as Nigel Farage,
mm-hmm.
who were elected simply because they were opposed to membership of Europe.
Right.
So you're talking about a turnout of 15-20% in the past. Now, that's in Britain. Other countries which are more European-oriented, you get, you know, quite big turnouts, 60-70%.
Okay, so this is, if you will, a significant election for...
It's going to be significant not only for Britain, but for the rest of Europe, too,
right.
Everyone's gearing up for it because they see it as a major battle
uh-huh.
between the liberals and the populist right.
What's the Prime Minister's approach to this? Is she, how does she go about this?
She doesn't want to have the election.
That's what I wondered. Okay.
And she's initially asked for an extension right up to the date of the election.
Okay.
in hopes that she doesn't have to hold the elections because she doesn't want to have a de facto referendum.
Yeah, but you've got to have people prepped to be elected. So I mean, running up to the election,
all the parties have people prepped.
Excuse me.
All the political parties have people prepped.
Oh, they do. Okay. Now, when would the election be held again?
I think it's the 22nd of May or 23rd of May.
Okay,
last week in May.
Basically, a month away. A month from now.
June.
June. Okay.
It's not a great deal of time in the future. You know?
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting to see how that plays. Now, what is Parliament's approach to this? This is significant because Parliament.
Well, Parliament has is in the process of pushing through another law, which says that Theresa May cannot leave, or the government cannot leave without a deal.
They
are pushing through a law which will remove that option, so that she has to negotiate a deal, have a second referendum, or decide to stay in the EU. She cannot just leave the EU. That should be finalized tomorrow and have the royal assent.
How important is the royal assent in this?
It's like the presidential signature.
Okay. Except
that the Queen can't veto.
Okay, okay.
She just signs it.
If she doesn't sign it, it still becomes law.
Oh, no. She has to sign it.
Okay, okay. All right. It's perfunctory. Okay. The thing that's stunning about this, Tom.
Yeah, the rubber stamp.
Right. The thing that's stunning about this is we've talked about this now for years. You and I, we've been chatting about the issue. And it's...
You know, we'll be talking about it for years more, too.
Really?
Yeah.
So, speculation on your part. In essence, the United Kingdom will stay a part of the European Union. It just will be so in a shadow form. It's just
I don't know. I honestly don't know. If you have a second referendum at the moment, the Remainers, those who want to stay in the EU as full members, are about 20 points ahead in the opinion poll.
Okay. So,
if I think what might also happen is that the government may just simply revoke Article 50, which is the legal mechanism which starts the withdrawal process.
Mm-hmm.
But it leaves open the possibility of reinvoking Article 50 at some point in the future.
Wow. Tom Arms of
Which just leaves us in this huge limbo.
Right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening, trying to unravel for us here in the States what's happening there in Great Britain with the European Union. We'll get back to more here in just a moment. Interesting story I want to touch on very quickly with you in a moment, Tom. That is the Internet and the United Kingdom. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Netanyahu has won a fifth term as Prime Minister of Israel. On the face of it, this is terrible news. Benjamin Netanyahu, King Bibi to his supporters, is a right-wing, ultra-nationalist, militarist populist who is the biggest single obstacle to peace in the Middle East. Or is he? And if he is that good or bad? Modern history has shown that the most obstinate political leaders are sometimes the best ones to achieve the required breakthrough compromise. Richard Nixon's history as a hardline anti-communist meant that he was the only one who could open the door to Mao's China. A similar move by a Democrat liberal would have been attacked as a sellout. It required compromise by hardliners Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin to end decades of war between Egypt and Israel. In Northern Ireland, tough men Ian Paisley and IRA leader Martin McGuinness were the only two who could have struck a workable compromise. While Netanyahu has been beaving away at the hustings, Donald Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner and his former lawyer Jason Greenblatt have spent 2 years hammering out a Middle East peace proposal. The plan is wrapped in the tightest of secrecy cloak. The only ones who know the details are Kushner, Greenblatt, U.S. Ambassador to Israel David Friedman, and Kushner and Greenblatt's aide Avi Berkovitz. President Trump is regularly briefed on the broad brush, but his twittering fingers are kept away from the details. Having said that, a few general thoughts have emerged. In a Washington Post op-ed in July, Kushner, Greenblatt, and Friedman floated the idea that the Palestinians abandon the long-held principle of the right of return in favor of a Marshall-type plan for Palestinian areas. Whether those areas involve a one-state, two-state, or even no-state or three-state solution is being kept under wraps. There's also meant to be an interesting new proposal on Jerusalem in the work. The plan was meant to be tabled last autumn, but the Trump administration put it back on the shelf because the likelihood of total rejection by one or both sides was too great at the time. Officials have said it will remain on the shelf until Kushner and co. think the political stars are in the perfect alignment required for success. The election of Netanyahu is seen by the Trump administration as one of those stars. One diplomat said that Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, his withdrawal from the Iran nuclear accord, the closure of the Washington diplomatic office for the Palestinians, and the drastic reduction in aid for the Palestinians can be seen as part of a plan by Trump to convince Netanyahu that the American president is the best, possibly the only chance of a pro-Israel peace. Set against that is the fact that Netanyahu has consistently opposed peace talks. The current standoff suits him just fine. The Israelis are clearly the top dog. The Palestinians are not so much the underdog as the abandoned Untermenschen of the Middle East. As such, Kushner and co. hope that the Palestinians are being backed into a corner where almost any agreement would be preferable to the current downward spiral of corruption, poverty, and perpetual war. There are also factors which cause the stars to shift against peace. Netanyahu could go to prison on any one of several corruption charges. There's also the strong possibility that Iranian forces in Syria could throw a spanner into the works. There are historical examples of hard-nosed, obstinate political leaders who've used the public perception of their policies to secure a legacy of peace. Unfortunately, they are the exception rather than the rule. There is nothing in Netanyahu or Trump's history which indicates that either of them will turn from the politics of fear and division towards peace. But they are uniquely positioned to do so. If either ignores the opportunity, then the election of Bibi is the major setback it appears on the surface.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, we've spent a lot of time on Brexit. I want to talk about one other issue associated with the United Kingdom and, of course, really the European Union as well, the Internet and new stringent requirements that has Google and major players somewhat concerned.
Yeah, Google, Facebook, Instagram, all the social media. Basically, they've started what's called a consultation process, which will be finished in June. And the idea is to introduce British legislation to regulate social media. And the legislation, if they don't go along with it, if they breach the legislation, the rules set down by legislation, they will be fined. And so, you know, what they're talking about is fake news, pornography.
Right. Hate speech,
memes,
hate
trolls,
speech,
whatever.
Yeah. And by the way, how is that being received by the general populace?
I think the general populace think it's a good idea.
Wow. Okay.
Rather tired of just this constant
barrage.
Banter.
Yeah. A
lot of it highly libelous, you know, and cloaked in anonymity, so you don't know who's doing it. Death threats. All the time we hear about death threats. I was listening to a radio program, a phone-in radio program. Someone didn't like what the presenter was saying, so they immediately tweeted them a death threat about how they're going to hit them over the head with a large sledgehammer.
Yeah.
You know,
But that is happening, and we're going to be following this with interest because obviously there are a lot of U.S. companies that are impacted by this. Well, actually, I say U.S. companies now that are being perceived more as international companies. Well,
they're being perceived as countries in their own right.
Exactly. Yes. All right, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. Tom, let's look at some election news. Top of the issue, Israel.
Oh, yes. Well, Netanyahu now has a fifth term.
Mm-hmm.
The question is whether or not how long he'll be in office, because he's got a number of corruption charges outstanding right. against him, and these are going to be coming up in the courts very quickly. He will do his best to hold them off, and he probably will. He's a wily political operator.
But what's the feeling in the European community about the events in Israel?
They don't like Netanyahu.
Okay. Why not?
They don't like it. I mean, one thing they point to is his election pledges in the last days of the election to annex the West Bank,
mm-hmm.
Which is contrary to every international law.
Right.
And he is opposed to a two-state solution, but he doesn't say what the one-state solution is or what the three-state solution is or anything else. He just says, I'm opposed to a two-state solution. All I want is the status quo,
right.
which nobody likes except Netanyahu and his supporters.
Okay, so basically he has very few friends right now in the European community.
That's right.
Okay. Moving on to other elections, let's look at the Indian election as well.
Wow. Indian elections. Do you realize there are 900 million voters?
Mm-hmm. It's the largest.
It takes 39 days for
right.
the elections
wow.
to take place. They set aside 39 days. There are 1 million polling states.
Whoa.
It starts on the 11th of April, and the results are not announced to the 23rd of May.
Wow.
And everyone thought that Modi was going to be a shoo-in, but they think now it might be a bit closer because exports have dropped, unemployment is up, the banks are in trouble, agriculture prices are down, big issue about women's rights, all these sorts of things are coming to the fore. What he does have working in his favor is the clashes with Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
Which is sort of garnered a patriotic vote.
All right. I want to go back to the statistics you just gave us. 900 million voters. By the way, a bit of trivia. India is the largest largest democracy in the world in population.
Yes.
That's an interesting little tidbit. How many? We got 900 million voters. How many polling places?
1 million.
And how long will this take to tally the votes?
39 days. They're tallying the vote. The voting will be over a number of days. The results will not be announced until the 23rd of May.
Right, right.
And they start on the 11th of April.
Amazing. All right. Let's look at other items. That's fascinating. By the way, is this gaining a lot of notoriety and interest in the European community?
It is. Okay. One of the problems with India is it's such a vast country, so many people.
Right.
It's so complicated.
They're
very difficult to get your head for people to get their head around it. And the culture and everything else is very different.
Right. All right. Let's look at a few other items. Let's look at the Brazilian note here to rewrite history books, whitewashing military rule.
Yeah. Well, Jair Bolsonaro sort of indicated that something like this during his election campaign. He was a great supporter
mm-hmm.
of the military dictatorship back in the 60s and 70s. 400 people disappeared during
right.
the military dictatorship. Several thousand, I think 4,000 were arrested and thrown into prison as political prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
But he thinks they were wonderful because they were a firm hand on the tiller.
Tiller, right.
So he wants the school textbooks to be rewritten saying just that.
Wow.
That the military dictatorship was a good thing for Brazil.
Paying again a close attention to this, how is that being reported in the European community? Significant?
Well, they you know, they think he's nuts.
Right.
They refer to him as Trump 2.0.
Right. I've seen that as well. All right, let's move on to another item, and we're going to get to a few items here if we can, with time allowing. Libya, what's happening in Libya?
Well, Libya is falling apart nicely. Mm-hmm. It did seem as if it was getting its act together. The problem with Libya is that it's one of these created countries. It was created by Italy. It used to be two or three countries. And since Gaddafi left, it's various factions been fighting. Nothing to do with ideology. There's no question of ISIS or the Muslim Brotherhood or anyone like that. They are simply fighting over the spoils of war.
Mm-hmm.
They're only interested in money. And the big chap who's at it now is a chap called General Khalifa Haftar, who's marching from the eastern half of the country onto the western half where Tripoli is. He has something called the Libyan National Army, and he's marching against something called the General National Accord, or the Government National Accord, which is backed by the UN and the Europeans. He launched his attack just 10 days before they were going to have a conference to set up details, or to agree details for a presidential election at the end of this year. So he basically is trying to usurp power.
What role are other countries playing in this, and how important is Libya relative to, military concerns and influence?
Well, at the moment, the other countries are simply, it's caught them off guard. They're shouting, they're saying, no, we don't like you, General Haftar. Stop fighting.
Russia?
And, well, of course, the main reasons is because the government that he's marching against was the one that was negotiating or controlling with the EU the flow of refugees from
mm-hmm.
Libya.
Ah.
And so this is likely to increase that flow of refugees.
All right. And of course, that brings up another issue at some point. Let's talk about the events in France before we go to the break. You've got Emmanuel Macron is looking to cut taxes in response to yellow vests. And of course, they were having revolts, if you will, across France. Is this an opinion that the president of France has been brought to heel, if you will?
Well, he responded to the yellow vest demonstrations by launching something called a national consultation.
Right.
It was both online and it was town hall meetings, and he traveled through the country. He sent his deputies to travel through the country to have these town hall meetings. And he's come back, and they've all come back, and surprise, surprise, they said, people want lower taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shock, horror.
Right.
And so, which is also not surprising, given that France has the highest taxes in Europe, 42%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he's basically said, we're going to lower the taxes. And in response to the yellow vest demonstrations and in response to his consultation.
Now, a question, does that satisfy the concerns of the yellow vest movement, or will it?
Too early to say.
Okay. Because one
it was yesterday he came out with this. There is no leadership, it's a grassroots movement. So, you know, you can't go to the spokesman for the yellow vest and say, what do you think?
Well, the other aspect of the yellow vest was initiated, if I recall correctly, on the cost of fuel, the cost of gas.
Yeah, they were going to raise the taxes on
gas.
On fuel.
Yeah, for so, a green initiative.
It's
taxes. Taxes. Okay. Does this in any way diminish President Macron's, persona, his political capital in the European Union by any chance?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Of course, in any international forum, to be truly successful, you have to have a firm domestic base.
Right.
But I think I haven't seen any indication of that.
Okay. Our guest this afternoon, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, England. And yes, this portion has been pre-recorded. We'll wrap things up here in just a moment with some very interesting stories coming from Canada, as a matter of fact. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're going to be focusing on Canada this last few minutes. We always like to wrap things up with kind of a humorous story. But before we get to the humorous story, I want to, and again, focusing on Canada, I want to chat with him about President Justin Trudeau and recent polling data showing that he's not doing very well, and a little bit of a surprise, Tom, because he was so highly rated among not only his country, but other leaders in the world. What's going on in Canada with President Trudeau?
Well, it's the SNC-Lavalin affair and his dismissal of two women cabinet ministers. And I think it's very interesting. What's happened in the last day or two, which I think could have a long-term impact in Canada and elsewhere, is that the Conservative opposition leader, Andrew Scheer, has been, you know, saying things such as, you know, Trudeau is an out-and-out liar, so forth and so on. He cheats, blah, 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 blah. And Trudeau is saying he might sue him for libel. Now, this is interesting because if he does sue him for libel and wins, it can have an impact on the conduct of election campaigns everywhere else.
In the future, yes.
We just had an election in Slovakia where a lady called Zuzana Kapitova was elected president on the basis of the fact that she ran a very low-key, honest, frank, you know, no shouting, no lying, facts-only campaign. And a lot of people are saying we could learn a lot from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Trudeau is thinking, well, maybe, you know, I can sue him for libel and we can help change the way elections are conducted.
I want to go back to my comment, though, about the international relations of Justin Trudeau, because he was seen as a new face, along with Emmanuel Macron, a younger leader. What does this do for the future of identifying younger leaders? Does this create a concern or a question as to their abilities to be, well?
I haven't heard that being voiced. I mean, I personally think that you have to be at least 70 years old to be to be president, prime minister. I'm just looking at my passport here. Yeah, 70.
Okay, 70. It'll work for you. All right, let's talk about another situation of an election, by the way, in Canada. This is a fascinating story. I saw this yesterday. So share with
Prince
us this.
Edward Island.
Uh-huh.
Now, who will you vote for, John Mackay or John Mackay?
So we really don't have
two
a choice.
Two candidates on the ballot.
Yeah.
And they have the same name.
And and we've got a situation similar to this here in our community, not necessarily the same names. We just have so many candidates, and how do you select? My question is, how do you identify which John Mackay or McKay you're voting for?
Well, they have their party name next to it.
Okay.
But that's about it.
My
wife ran for local council here, and she does a lot of her business under her maiden name, which is Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wanted to run under the name of Riley. And they said, no, said the party. You must run under the name Arms. because everything is listed alphabetically.
Ah.
And there are some lazy voters who right. just pick the first yeah. name on the list.
Yes, yes. This is an age-old argument. Very interesting, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. So we have, you said McKay. We say here in the States, McKay. John McKay versus John McKay.
Yeah. They're blaming it. They're both of them blaming it on Scotland.
Oh, okay.
Because Prince Edward Island, where they live, was settled by Scots.
Okay, well, that's grand. I'm sure that they'll appreciate that. Tom, as always, thank you for your time this evening. Look forward to further conversations with you in the week ahead.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Head Radio is a production of The Talk Station.